Well, hello there. Welcome back to People Over Pixels, a show exploring the human side of running a digital business. Following the conversation on project discovery workshops in our last episode, this week on People Over Pixels, we're talking all about how to write effective project specifications. I'm Giorgio Casella, and with co-host Sam Biggins, we're going to be discussing the do's and the do nots of writing specifications for your next web project. We're going to be covering how to make sure the spec is aligned with your business goals, the importance of not skimping on the details, and how to tackle the dreaded budget conversation. Nobody likes the B word. I importantly also learn the importance of why your project specs benefit from being a living document before Sam continuously berates me about my ignorance for the rest of the episode. So grab your notepad, crack open a cold one, and let's get stuck into episode 8. Today we're doing a nice follow-on from last episode, which was all about discovery workshops and how to take your projects from chaos to clarity. Today is, I guess, what comes next after your discovery workshops and understanding what you need from a project. It's all about how you put together a more detailed website specification, some do's, some don'ts, and the nitty-gritty details that are going to make sure that that final project spec is actually what you need it to be.
Absolutely. So before you start your discovery phase, there are some bits you need to pin down. But once you've done your discovery, you've understood what you need to build, the most important thing to do is have it in writing and have a shared document which every project stakeholder, whether they're on the client side, whether they're on the agency side, really understands what it is we're building and make sure that's down somewhere for everyone to look at.
Absolutely. And unlike some documents, this should not be a living document. This shouldn't be something that gets updated continuously. You might want some extra bits in to put those updates into, but surely if you've decided on what it needs to be, you don't want to be then continuously updating that and adding new things in.
I disagree.
Okay.
So I think your specification should always be a living document. If you've got a fixed scope, fixed budget, then it needs to be delivered to that specification. It can't change a lot. But you don't want to build a project, not update your specification, and then launch your project and not match. It should be part of the documentation that goes forward. There should definitely be a solid starting point where everyone agrees that's the terms of engagement. But if you're taking a more agile approach to a project, as the business needs change within the 18 months the project's built, that should be reflected in how that section needs to work.
I stand corrected.
Just differing opinions.
Different opinions.
Yeah.
The experience, the words of somebody that has never managed a web project from end to end and only does part of the process and doesn't like to change it midway through.
Which would be great, but is our business the same as it was 18 months ago?
Absolutely not, no.
Is it the same as it was 6 months ago?
No, fair point.
So I think it should evolve as you go.
Cool. Now, with that controversy aside and with me putting my place,
you've
made your bed now. This is going to be yet another episode I'm going to shut up and rely on entirely you to do because you've just told me I'm wrong. So,
right, yeah. No, so this isn't one on how to have productive, collaborative conversations.
No, this is not. I resign formally from People Over Pixels. I've had enough.
All right. It's the Sam Show now, then.
The Sam Show.
Welcome.
God help us all. No, I'm going to jump in with the first one. Something that, for that specification, for getting that, whether it's a living document or not, first thing I think you want to do is have a conversation about budget. Like, yes. Let's get this one out the way first of all. It's the one that everybody hates talking about, whether you are an agency, whether you're a brand. Those meetings where the B word comes up, everybody kind of puckers the sphincter a little bit and goes, oh, we don't want to talk about this bit. You've got to talk about it up front.
Absolutely. No one likes talking about the budget.
No.
You see everyone massively squirm, like, we'll start before we've even had a discovery session and we'll go, got to ask. The question no one wants to ask, talk about, what's your budget for this? I think if you're a client side of that, your immediate reaction is, oh, they want to see how much they can rinse us for.
Yep.
And I think that's the difficult part of it, right? Is they don't want to share a budget with you because they think you're going to rinse you for it.
If I've got 100K, you're going to bill me 100K.
Yeah. The agency side don't want to spec a massive project that's not suitable for the budget that's provided.
We don't want to put days of time into writing a detailed spec, working out how long it's going to take, break it into sprints, like prepare all of this stuff for you to then go, well, I've got 50 quid and an out-of-date Freddo in my pocket. Will that do?
Take the Freddo.
Take the Freddo. Even if it's out-of-date.
there's always someone who will be able to do it for your budget. And it's very different. Like a budget Yaris car is going to be very different to a high spec Rolls Royce car.
Mm-hmm.
They both drive down the same road, but what they have and what they require are very different specs in that.
Absolutely. So first thing is always upfront, honest conversation about budget, even if it's ballparks, even if whoever has to go first say, well, we're estimating somewhere in the ballpark of 45 to 60 for something of this size. Is that within the realms of possibility? Is that inside, outside? And you can simply just give a yes, no.
Yeah.
All right. And similarly on the brand side, like, have a range ready. Think about what you're willing to spend. Think about if somebody told you 60,000, is that going to make you go, oh God, no, that's too much.
Yeah.
If they told you 150,000, is that going to be, we thought we were going to have to spend more than that because this is pretty involved.
Absolutely. We did a project where we gave a ballpark and the client said, I think it's more complicated than you expect.
That's the dream, isn't it?
Oh, okay. And then we had to have a much deeper, and it was much complicated than the initial brief they'd given us didn't cover all the things they needed to do. So when we went in with a ballpark, they were like, we were expecting to spend more than that. If you can do it for that, great. But I think you need to, let's have a further talk about the budget.
Yeah, there's no way you're going to be able to deliver what we want with that budget.
And
we're going to come to the point where you go, we've run out of time and budget on this. And they're going to go, I told you so.
Yeah, I think that's why a website spec is so important, is you need a shared understanding of what you're actually building. Is the worst thing for a project is you get halfway through and someone goes, why is it not do this? Or I was expected to do that. And your agency side goes, oh, okay. No one's ever told us that. And an assumption's been made somewhere along the lines. And now the project's going to cost double what it was scoped to. And you end up in a really sticky mess for it.
That segues nicely onto the second point here.
Yes.
Which is, things will always take longer than you expect, no matter how well prepared you are. Because of that, think about how you can sometimes take a phased approach to development as well. Like, if you want everything out of the box all in one go, that's going to take a projected period of time. However, if you have MVP, minimum product, that can go out with additional things that can come after launch, you're going to get to launch point significantly faster. So break things down into a phased approach.
I think the other key part of a phased approach is, as soon as something's shipped and it's live, you can get value from it.
Yeah.
You're doing this project because it's going to deliver value, whether that's e-commerce, whether that's an internal application. It has a purpose that's going to deliver value. If you have an 18-month project, a huge undertaking, and you wait till the end of that 18 months to launch everything in one go, A, you're going to overwhelm the people using the system, but also you've waited all that time and you've got great features which no one can use until you've launched. If you were to launch every 3 months, like roll out feature by feature, bit by bit, then that one you launched at the first 3 month point has already had kind of like 15 months of value delivered before you've got to that launch. And a phased approach allows you just to keep doing it, keep rolling. We've done projects where you launch, deliver the first phase, and they've got a roadmap all laid out, the client, and then actually when they've spoken to their customers, they want to change the direction of it slightly and go onto another area. And that allows you to do that and keep listening to your customers and make sure every bit you deliver delivers value. And that's why it's a living document.
Okay. Right. I get it.
Okay, I'm going to stop now.
I think that also lets you introduce a lot of value from a brand and marketing and customer experience, customer success perspective. Like, your marketing manager will thank you for taking that phased approach, because they are going to have, if you've got an 18-month project and you've got 3 monthly releases, they're going to have 6 different sets of campaigns that they can release announcing new features, how-tos, why it's a benefit, you know, producing documentation, training up customer experience advisors on how things work so they can then go out and train their customers and do account management. It feeds into so much more than just developing a new project.
Absolutely. And in terms of that customer relations, if you're telling them, yeah, that's a really good, we'd like to incorporate that feature you're suggesting, it'll be 2 years before we get there, rather than, yes, it's part of the phase rollout, this month we're focusing on this, and then I can see that's in the rollout for May or something like that, allows you to keep having that narrative rather than the really archaic approach to software where it's once and done. You've got to build everything up for one massive release, and then you're going to release it all in one go. It's a thing of nightmares nowadays. It's web applications. You can just push and deploy and deploy over and over again, 4 or 5 times in a day, and it just seamlessly happens in the background for all your customers. It
makes zero difference.
Yeah. Number 3 on my list nicely promotes the last podcast episode.
It does.
Do your discovery sessions.
Yes.
So, not going to talk loads about this, but I think it's really important that you don't make assumptions. You make sure you include all the right stakeholders. You understand what they need from a project and not just jump in with, we're going to do this, we think it's the right thing. Make sure you've listened to everyone. Make sure you've consulted the right people and come up those discovery sessions with lessons.
Yep. It's about diving into the unknown, finding all the bits, doing Sam's favourite thing and asking why. If you want to understand why Sam is similar to a year 5 school child and why his parents hate him, go back and listen to episode 7.
In so many ways.
So many ways. Point 4 on your list. Yes. Of do's for your website specifications. Set very specific goals for the new site.
Yeah, so often people come to us and say, we need a new system or we need a new website. And you ask them why and they go, because we do, because it's old. But just because something's aged or feels dated isn't the core reason why you need it. You need to understand what value your application exists for and what it provides to the business.
Yep. My mum's still got a sewing machine from like the 1970s.
Yeah.
And it works perfectly well and does nothing like better or worse than one you could just go and buy now.
Yeah.
Similar for a website. If you've got something, even if it's old, but that delivers everything you need it to, do you need that? However, if experience, speed, the ability to handle kind of queues and capacity, if you're a high volume e-commerce site, what are those key things you need to do? What are the goals? What are the metrics? Like, what are you going to measure that success on afterwards?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's about what value does this deliver to your business and using that to define the success. And that's a really important one that drives into everything else you do. Every page on your website, every call to action should guide people towards what you're trying to get out of your website. If you're trying to get more sales out of your website, you should be driving people towards that. If you want to get upsells of your higher margin items, drive people towards that and make sure that's part of the purpose. There's so many websites you see out there which you get to the homepage and there's 4 different call to actions and you've no idea which one they're trying to get you to click on. And customers get paralysis from that. You need to make sure that it has a purpose and that one goal.
Or worse, a key call to action hidden on the 4th slide of a carousel in the hero.
Oh, yes, that old nugget.
Yep, the lovely, perfect one.
Yeah. We'll one day talk about why you should not have carousels on your website.
That is an episode to come. Yes,
yeah, that'd be a good not one. Today.
Putting the marketing hat on, I think if you are writing a brief and a website spec, you have to make sure you get your... cringe a little bit, but brand DNA across in that brief. You can't just focus on functionality, right? If you are an established business and you're looking to do a fairly significant project, you need to make sure that every stakeholder involved, including the agency that's building it or the partner that's building it, understands who you are, who your company is, why you exist, and what your mission and purpose is. You know, people buy from people, they buy from personality, they want to understand who you are. So to make sure that you can sell and get to people, you have to make sure that that culture and that value is built into everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're commissioning an agency to work on your project, you need to make sure they understand what your business is all about. If you don't understand a business, then you're not going to build the best product for them.
I mean, classic thing that we do whenever we're talking to somebody about culture and their brand and their personality and their DNA is, what existing materials do you have? Do you have brand guidelines and documents you can send over like that? Do you have culture documents that you share internally, like a handbook that you give employees, or you know, the way we do things kind of stuff? I mean, even if you've got like social media and your marketing team's on it and likes to talk about how things happen internally, share some TikToks or some reels or whatever that you've produced on company culture, how you act, how you do certain stuff, like customer stories, all those experiences. All of that goes towards building this picture of who you are as a company and how that needs to be fed into designs, functionality, UX, CTAs, the whole thing.
Yeah. Even when we were having the office refitted, we sent them our full brand guidelines, our tone of voice, our culture handbook.
Oh, I bet they loved that. Yeah, receiving 3 like 20 page plus PDFs on everything about us.
But it worked, right? We got the right. They understood what we were trying to create here because we shared. And if you don't share it, no one's going to know what your culture is and what you're trying to do.
Until they bought the wrong colour of paint.
Until they bought the wrong colour of paint.
Did not pay attention to the brand guidelines there.
No. I think the last do we've got on the list that's really important is once you've signed that contract and you've chosen your agency to work with, don't expect just to be leaving them to it. If an agency's going, all right, yeah, we've got your brief, we'll see you in 18 months when we're done, be a little wary.
Sounds great to me. Pen yeah. on paper, bugger yeah. off, signed the it. Pub, leave somebody yeah. else to do it.
No, I think throughout all the build, it should be, even if you're not releasing to the public, it needs to be a phased release internally. You need to make sure that you're involved, you're having constant update meetings, not daily, but at least kind of one or two a month, just to make sure that you understand where they are, where we're up to in the project, and check that everything's going smoothly. And it'll massively help your development teams understand that it is in the right direction. And you don't get to the end of a project after a year of them going, they give you a presentation on it and you go, ah,
this isn't what I wanted.
This isn't what we meant. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really important that you have that constant dialogue once you've launched.
Yeah. We've spoken about this before of making sure that you are involved, and that's like, even if you write something down and describe it to the nth degree, the way somebody else can interpret that and that vision, things yeah. can go like significantly off the rails, and it starts as only an ever so slight yeah. curve, but the longer that goes on, the more it deviates until you are like massively away from the original route. So making sure you have those regular points of alignment and that you are involved to go, I know that's what I said, but I didn't actually mean it like yeah. that. Or, yes, that's exactly what I meant. Carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. And having that regularly means that things don't diverge and end up costing a lot more money.
Okay. Six key do's.
Yep.
Sounds weird. Do's. Six key things to do when yeah. writing your website.
That's brief. Better.
Absolutely. Which means we then have to come on to the don'ts.
The don'ts. The don'ts. Negatives.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, I'm going to keep this short. No one likes a negative, Nelly. But I think the first one you need to do is not choose what technology you're going to build on before you've figured out what the project's going to be.
Yep, makes sense. So,
time and time again, you see people trying to build large, really complicated e-commerce systems which deal with fulfillment on a platform that's just absolutely not suited for it, because in their past job, they ran a travel blog.
Is what they're familiar with.
Yeah, absolutely. It's this platform they're familiar with, but doesn't mean it's the right tool for the job. So it's really important that you have the open dialogue with your agency, that you're picking the right tool for the job, but also don't let your agency dictate. We often see it where it's just cookie cutter. They grab something off the shelf, they put your logo on it and go, well, that's how it works. And when your business doesn't work like that, that platform's never going to work for you either. So it does need to be an open dialogue, but make sure you're not closed mind to what technologies can be used.
I think we've all been there, those times where you're trying to shoehorn a bunch of different things to just work yeah. in the way that you wish you had something bespoke to work. And
yeah.
if I do this and do this and connect that here, then it's really long-winded and it's got like 10 different like points of potential but breakdown.
It works on a Tuesday.
Yeah, but it works ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've tested it and it did it. That means everybody's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think when it comes to bespoke applications, you need to make sure that the right technology has been used. Does it need to be scalable because it's going to deal with 100,000 orders a second? Does it need to be like fast response? Does it need to work in a nuclear attack?
Yeah.
We have had one of our developers work on a project which they wanted scoping to work in the nuclear attack. It didn't need to, but that's what the client brief has asked for, so they had to write a nuclear plan.
Are we allowed to talk about that on air? A men in black trench coats about to burst through that door and drag you away.
Yes, well, it's a good job we're in Nottingham, not Sheffield right now. So I think you've got to make sure you choose the right technology for the what you're building.
Yep. Point two on the don'ts, getting negative. This is one I think probably annoys everybody. Everybody who's ever received a brief like this.
Yeah.
Once you've prepared your specification, don't just mass distribute it to as many people as you can find by chucking three different variations of like web developer into Google. All right. If you send that spec to 100 different places, you're not going to get great stuff back. The people on the other end that probably could have been a great pick for you are not going to respond and waste their time, because it's very clear when these things are bombarded out en masse.
The worst thing is when you're in the BCC for them all, most of the time we find our clients only get desperate agencies back.
Yep.
So those who are good agencies doing lots of work are unlikely to respond to a blanket, you've got no idea how many people it's gone to, tender. There's no real value in doing so.
And we always question it. When we see those ones come through, we go, it'd be a great project, but is there any point responding to this? It's clearly gone out to 25, 50, 100 different companies.
Yeah, you're not going to get quality from doing that. You need to talk to each of your agencies, pick them one by one, and work out who you'd like to work with and who you can see yourself working with. By all means, shop around, do lots of that, but don't bombard.
Be picky about who you ask for a response.
The other thing is, if you send it out to 100 people in one go, and they all come back with one question, you're going to have 100 of probably the same question to field.
That annoying little ding noise when something lands in your inbox is just going to be going constantly. Yeah. What's the budget for this? When do you need a response by?
Yeah.
Who's going to be evaluating it? What are the evaluation criteria? If you haven't got all of that nailed down first time, that is all going to keep coming back through.
And
you're going
to have to then
update the document, because it's a living document, as I have now learned. And you're probably going to have to distribute it to people again.
Yeah,
we've answered all of these questions. Here's an update. And then they'll have some more questions based off the back of that. Nightmare for everybody.
And you're fielding it from agencies which possibly aren't suitable either. So you really need to make sure you handpick the agencies you're going to send it to. Send it to 4, 5, maybe 10 if you really want to shop around.
Yeah.
But make sure you pick ones which are the right for your team.
And have respect for the people on the other end. And if you are going to go for 10 plus because you want to get a little bit of a wider pool, be explicit on what you want back from them.
Yeah.
Don't tell them you want an entire tender delivering. When even against 10, like, that's still a ridiculous amount of work to do to go up and for you to evaluate all 10 of those tenders. Have something much smaller scale to get first to help you narrow. A creds deck, for example.
Yeah.
To narrow down experience in that sector, whatever it might be, and narrow it down to the 5 that you want a full tender from.
Yeah. I mean, a tender will take us probably the best part of 2 weeks to put together.
Yeah.
In the right detail. So when they've sent out mass, the best ones ask for an expression of interest first, which gives them more information about you, why you'd be a good fit for it. And then they come back to 3 or 4 of those with more information and a full tender to produce. And I think that's a really good way of doing it if you want to go out a little more en masse because you haven't got enough information.
Absolutely. Make sure you have those little micro stages that get you down to your final pool.
Yeah.
Something I'm really bad at, number 3, you're getting lost down rabbit holes.
Yes. You were the ideal client for the Evoluta website, weren't you?
I fucking agree.
I think everyone does, right? You get a little carried away with what your website used to have, what it could do, what you've seen your competitors doing. And if you take 10 of your competitors all doing different things on their website and you try and put them all into one thing, it's going to end up as the Frankenstein of websites, right?
Yep.
And we all see it. It's all that shiny thing syndrome of, oh, I'll have that, I'll have this. Can it do all these things? But it goes back to that point earlier of it needs to have purpose. Everything you do for your website, everything that you're going to put on there needs to drive towards that business purpose. Don't get people distracted with a calculator for something which isn't relevant to them buying. Don't try and do everything your competitors are doing or everything your old website did just because it did it. Make sure the features align with the purpose. And if you've got existing features on your existing website, include them in the specification. But I would challenge you before you do to look at your analytics and prove that those are still of business value to your customers.
Think of what you could lose.
Yeah.
Genuinely. Most complex builds probably have at least 1 or 2 features that nobody uses and can be dropped off.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I think that's a good reason for the phased approach, is you can do it bit by bit and not get carried away down a route which no one's going to use. Number 4. So this is one you're not guilty of. Skimping on the details.
Finally, some positivity.
Some positivity. Building up now is shut you down. I think it's really easy when you're within a business and you're writing a specification for how your system should work, just to forget that everyone outside your industry has not a clue how it works. And discovery sessions help with that. Talking to your agency, bring them around to give them a tour of how it all works. That's all really important. But make sure those assumptions you've got are written down. one of my favorite things to do with all specifications is to write a glossary of what a business means and what the rest of the world calls it.
Yep.
Or an explanation of what it is. The amount of times we come across acronyms where you're like, okay, sorry, you're just going to have to explain that one to me. I think my favorite of all time is probably dogs.
Okay.
Which are deed of grants.
Not woof woof.
Not woof woofs, no. Okay. And split dogs.
Oh, God.
When the first time I heard about a split dog, I was a bit concerned, to be honest. They were like, oh, yeah, well, sometimes we have split dogs and sometimes we have dogs. And I was like, pardon? What? Yeah, so deed of grants and split deed of grants.
Okay.
Makes perfect sense when someone explains that. Yeah. But when you first start hearing about them splitting dogs in half, you wonder who you're working with.
Starting to call the RSPCA.
Yeah. Like, this company over here keep talking about splitting dogs. Mm. And then some acronyms have multiple different meanings, right? So ARR is often run rate or revenue.
Yep.
And your run rate and your revenue.
Yep.
And your recurring revenue. It could be anything. So making sure that when you're talking about a term in your business, and most businesses love a three-letter acronym. I do not. Making sure that everyone knows what they mean, how they're calculated, and all that's really pinned down, because that one A4 page of glossary could save hours of misunderstanding.
Absolutely.
I think the other half of this, though, is it's a bit of a Boris, don't go out, but go out situation about to happen.
It's a bit of a Boris.
Yeah. You want to explain things in detail, but you're never going to get everything down. Even if you've got 100-page, 1,000-page specification.
Oh, please don't ever send us a 1,000-page specification.
I've dealt with 150 before, 150 pages of it, and you still miss things, right? Yep. Like, there becomes a point where it's probably going to be too long for someone to read. We will read if you send us a 150-page specification. But a lot of detail gets lost in that and a lot of waffling. You need to make sure you keep it to the things which actually matter, what's important for this application, and not try and do everything. Because by the time you've written that, you're going to have spent 2 years writing your specification. Your business will be in a completely different place to where it was 2 years ago. Then you'll start rewriting the specification and it'll just keep on going forever. You need to make sure it's a concise document about what you're trying to achieve and focusing on the things that matter for this phase of development.
Kiss.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it short and simple if you don't want to call someone a dumber.
I'm already insulting you today. That's what, let's carry on now.
Right, well, let's get to the end of this then.
You've had enough.
Yeah, I've had enough. I'm going. I told you, I quit the podcast. This is it. I'm going to at least see my tenure on this episode out before I go. The final don't is do not underestimate just quite how long it is probably going to take to build your project.
Yes. I think if you want a project done well and with good quality, you need to make sure it's got the time to do that. If you're contacting your 100 agencies and saying we need it in 2 weeks' time, you're probably going to get 2 weeks' worth of project. It'll either work how their systems already work for people, or it just won't. It won't be suitable for what you're trying to achieve. And that's fine if you want a £200 plumbing website. Probably straightforward. Homepage, contact page.
Boom, done.
Boom, done. Photo, that's it. But if you're trying to do something which is anything slightly complicated, whether that's e-commerce, whether that's an internal application, you need to make sure it's got the time. You need to make sure you're giving it the time from your end, checking it through, testing it regularly, making sure it works for all your different stakeholders. All these things take lots of time, and it's very easy to think, oh, well, I signed a contract, be 40 grand later, and I'll just get a website next week. If you're spending 40 grand on a week's worth of development, then
wow,
you probably need to question why.
Yeah, they've either but got also a shitload of here. People doing the development, or you're being mugged off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was my don'ts.
That's your don'ts. So that's the do's, that's the don'ts. I've been insulted 4 times.
Not that you're keeping count.
Not that I'm keeping count.
Yeah. So I think the most important thing to round up is a couple of key takeaways.
Indian's my go-to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think mine too. Right, that's it, I think. Right.
We're thank done. You for yeah, listening. Let us know yeah. your favourite takeaways on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. There are 3 important things to take away from this, as well as all the do's and don'ts.
Yeah. I think the most important one is your specification is there to reduce risk. It's to reduce the risk of going off in the wrong direction, to reduce the risk of scope creep and a project evolving into a monster which it never should have been. And it stops your cost getting away as much. Like, you knowing, everyone knowing what the definition of success is for this project allows you to massively reduce that risk. And from your point of view, reduce the risk of this going off track and you having to answer to your stakeholders. But also that overall, making sure what you're trying to achieve is written down, everyone understands what we're building, and you don't get any horrible misunderstandings where you end up with someone completely misaligned with that.
Yep.
I think the second one is, I'm just going to rub it in more, I'm really sorry. But with a specification, it's about it being a living document. And it should always be an open dialogue. Yes, it should be written down. Yes, it should be versioned. And it's really important that it is a document that everyone can see and it doesn't just kind of completely wander off in a different direction. But it needs to be able to, if something's changing, if a misunderstanding's happened about a part of a business or how you process orders internally has changed, that needs to be replicated and that conversation needs to happen and that's reflected in the dialogue of everything. Really sorry.
It's all right, I'm just the comic relief.
Yeah, that's what you're employed for.
Ouch. It took a second. That was so harsh. It took a fucking second to sink in. Jesus. That's being clipped and shared with the entire company.
If you want to, then go for it. So the third thing, lost my train of thought for a second. The third thing on the list is don't make assumptions. So if you're talking about dogs and split dogs, it's probably not that obvious to the rest of the company.
Don't assume somebody's murdering puppies.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Ask for clarification.
Yeah, ask for clarification. And those things that your business does that you're really proud of as part of your DNA are probably part of your DNA that you're proud of because not everyone in the industry does it. So make sure you don't make assumptions that everyone knows what you mean in a document. That's it.
Cool.
Hopefully it creates some nice, clear specification documents.
Yeah, I hope me spending 40 minutes being beaten, battered and psychologically bruised helps you all write far better website specifications for your upcoming projects.
Or at least entertained you.
Or at least you've been entertained. Yep. If you'd like to donate to my therapy fund, I'll make sure the link to the Just Giving page is included in the show notes. Seriously. Yeah, if you have enjoyed this episode, all the details in the show notes of what you should do next, which includes subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you so choose to listen to. Make sure to leave us a lovely rating or review if you are so kind and you've enjoyed hearing me being battered around by Sam today. Make sure to go back and listen to some of our previous episodes, particularly the one on Discovery Sessions, which is a nice prefacing episode to this one. And of course, feel free to connect with either of us on LinkedIn. Our profiles are going to be in the show notes for you to find us there. And I think that covers it all off. Lovely stuff. Until next time, it's been a pleasure. Ciao.
You don't mean that this time, do you?